Welcome back to another episode of the Anarcho Book Club. So today we're going to talk about some Quakers, the Quaker anarchists of Pennsylvania. And what we read is called The Pennsylvania's Anarchist Experiment. And I hope you guys are reading along because it's a pretty interesting... Well, actually, you might, whenever you're reading this, if you read this, you may think that this was kind of boring, because it is a history book, so I can see why you would think that's boring. But just the very roots of anarchy in America through the Pennsylvania experiment, it predates Emma Goldman. It predates all of the things we've talked about so far, at least in the United States. And at this point, it was just in the colonies. And we're gonna kind of leave to the side the whole idea of colonialism for now, because that's not the heart of what I was wanting to get at with this. So the article or segment that we read was from a book, a series of five-volume book. It was from a five-volume series by Murray Rothbard called Conceived in Liberty. And I do recommend, even though this is kind of more of a right-leaning historian, philosopher, anarchist, I do highly recommend reading this just for a different worldview, a different take on the founding of the United States, and a different take on, well, on anarchy, for that matter. So, first we're going to just run through kind of what this segment of the book covered. And it is basically that William Penn, who was owed money, I think it was 15,000 pounds, something like that, 16,000 pounds, I think, actually, by the King of England, was granted the lordship over an entire tract of land now known as Pennsylvania. And he wanted to make it a sort of an experiment where he invited all the Quakers from the other colonies and from England and Scotland, all of the United Kingdom or the British Empire at the time. And so he did. And I've actually gotten some feedback from some of you, some of the listeners, about this whole segment of history. And it's the kind of the argument that, well, this is kind of a walled garden experiment where it was very controlled by William Penn, and also it was controlled, their experiment in anarchy, which was not the intention of William Penn, was not challenged by the full force, the full might of the British Empire at the time, because it was more of a distraction than an actual threat. And that may be true, but that's not really the heart of what I wanted to get at with this. And I will say, I didn't actually have an intention with this reading in the beginning. As I read through it, I realized a few things, and I realized what I really wanted to cover with this reading. So let's just kind of go through it. So William Penn got this land, and he sent out the word, and Quakers all around came flocking to it. And it wasn't just Quakers, but the majority of people that came to Pennsylvania were Quaker. And if you don't know much about Quaker or Quakerism, go ahead and check it out. Do a quick DuckDuckGo search and kind of see what they're all about. They're very plain, or they kind of believe in they don't believe in dolling themselves up with lots of fancy clothing and makeup and jewelry. And I think that even holds true today, because some of my family are Quaker, and they kind of hold to that traditional view of Quakerism. But that doesn't mean they're boring. That doesn't mean that their philosophies are, or their ideologies are plain. There's a lot more depth to Quakerism than just not wearing jewelry and not wearing fancy clothing. For instance, Quakers tend to be pacifists. In fact, it's in the very nature of Quakerism to support a sort of pacifism. They won't bear arms, as it were, against another. They don't really support a militia, although in the case of Pennsylvania, the Quakers seemed more than happy to hire a militia as long as they weren't Quaker. So there is that sort of thing. But where we get to the heart of the story that Rothbard lays out for us is the Quaker resistance to things like taxation and the Quaker spirit for individuality and community at the same time. And as you read through it, or as you read through it, I hope you saw that the Quakers, though they had a very strong sense of self, each individual, they also came together and they had their communities. And they had their meetings, a meeting of friends, and they had a sort of unity in a unifying ideal, a unifying philosophy. And with that unity, they resisted taxation, not with violence, not with any kind of uprisings. They did have protests against it, public protests, but it's not what you think. It's not, they weren't out in the streets with their signs. They weren't out marching exactly. Their protest was simply a quiet non-compliance. It was a quiet non-compliance with the rules set forth by William Penn. He was duty-bound to the king to collect taxes, and they simply said no. They simply resisted. And they resisted quietly, so to speak. I mean, I'm sure there were some that spoke out against it at their meetings. I'm sure they spoke out against it, and they communicated with each other in such a way that it was a unified response. And one of the types of taxes that many of my fellow citizens of the United States will understand is the idea of quitrents. It's the idea that you go out and you buy a piece of property, and theoretically you own that piece of property, but in the end, you still have to pay a sort of rent to the lord of that region. And so William Penn hoped to trade the debt the king owed him for a profitable lordship over a piece of land. Profitable because he can collect quit rents. So you own this land, you farm this land, or you raise cattle, or you do whatever you do. Maybe there's a blacksmith. And then at the end of the year, you have to pay a tithe to the lord of the land. Because at that point you realize, ah, well, the person from whom I bought this land does not really believe that I own this land, because now I have to pay William Penn and the king a tithe of some sort, a tax, a quit rent. And it becomes, it's in the United States we call these property taxes. And these supposedly pay for schools and roads and public health care, but from my experience, they generally don't even start to cover any of those expenses. But even if they did, it's still a rent. It's rent seeking from the state level. And the Quakers, and it's very important not to mix up the Puritans with the Quakers. The Quakers were completely and utterly oppressed by the Puritans early on. And after all of this, after this glimpse into history that we've read. But the Quakers resisted this simply by not paying. And William Penn tried to force them into paying, and they resisted. The image on the website is kind of a snapshot portrait of some of the lengths that William Penn went to enforce these quit rents. And it's simply a picture of these looks like rich men going around beating and stripping naked the Quakers to extract this tax from them, this quit rent. And so the end point that I sort of wanted to get to with this reading was, or the thing that really it sparked an idea in my head, was that I've always looked at the Quakers and their history and admired them for their stout opposition to violence. Because don't be mistaken, any sort of collection of tax or quit rent can be seen as violence. Because if you play by their rules and you buy a piece of property, and then afterwards they say, ah, but now you have to still pay us a rent. And if you don't, we'll come around, and just as the picture on the website depicts, we will extract this wealth from you by force if necessary. And any idea that requires force like this, that requires putting a person to the sword or to the pointing your gun at them and extracting wealth, that is theft. That is a persistent idea in my own philosophy and my own worldview that I haven't been able to dismiss. It is theft. Taxation is therefore theft, because taxation can be only enforced by violence. And the Quakers resisted this. They resisted this for at least 5 or 6 years before eventually they submitted. Even at the end of this little snippet that we read, you'll see that they were resisting. But eventually, if you continue the book, because this is volume one of the five-volume series, if you continue that first volume, you'll see that they eventually relented and submitted and became a little bit more on par with the expectations of the king and William Penn. And that seems to be the way things go in many cases. So, but the takeaway is this snapshot. It's the resistance. It is the essence of anarchism to resist external force. External force to change you into a good citizen. External force to change you into a compliant tax cow, or a compliant wage slave, maybe you might call it. And I know these are trigger words for kind of the agorist, anarchist movement, but that's what it is. I use these intentionally, these words, these trigger phrases. So kind of the idea that I wanted to put forth in this episode is maybe we, as anarchists, or as maybe if you're not an anarchist listening to this, as prospective anarchists, maybe we should examine our own lives and examine the external forces that are applied upon us, the external forms of violence applied upon us to get us to become good citizens of our country, or become good citizens of the region in which we live, to become good digital citizens, as it were, to Google and Facebook and Twitter and all the different platforms that claim a sort of rent on our lives, a rent on our data, as it were. They claim a tax. And if you don't do as they say, this will incur damages on your life in some way or another, some form or another. And so I examine my own life to see. I have embraced free software almost fully. There are certain things that I still hold on to that I need to find an alternative to, such as some essentials that I don't really know how to get rid of, like banking, for instance. Because I have to have, you have to have it to pay bills and so on. But and maybe that's another thing that can be gotten rid of. But I examine my own life to see what kind of external forces are placed upon me, and what can I do to better my existence as an individual. And I would challenge my listener to examine their own lives. Do you are you a slave to Google right now? This is one of the easiest ones, I think, because if you are, you have a Gmail account or you have a YouTube account that you go and watch YouTube and so on. Maybe there's an alternative out there. Like, for instance, Odyssey.com, I believe is what it is. Yeah, Odyssey.com or LBRY. There's an alternative there. Or PeerTube. Maybe you like Twitch. You like watching Twitch streams. Why not check out something decentralized like, I think it's called DLive. I've not even looked into it, so maybe it's not even something you should look into. But or maybe you're a user of Discord, which, by the way, was just purchased by Microsoft. Maybe you should look into something else, like XMPP/Jabber, whatever you want to call it, or Matrix, the Matrix protocol for chat and so on. Maybe you should look into something different. For that, to free yourself of the chains that will eventually, if they aren't already, placed upon you by these megacorps, these tycoons of the digital industry. And maybe instead of going to your local Walmart, as they call it, and buying all these mass-produced foods, maybe you should look into buying locally. And this is one thing I'm looking into. Instead of going somewhere like I already shop at kind of local shops for vegetables, but maybe instead of buying large orders, you know, large prepackaged types of things like lunch meat and things like that. Maybe go to the local farmer's market, because I know at least mine has lunch meat and meat and vegetables, and I'm not a vegan, so these things appealed to me. Maybe you can find more local things, and you can pay cash. And by doing that, you'll not only avoid paying your tax to Tyson Meats and Green Giant, is it called Green Giant? Anyway, the vegetable producers. Dole, I know that's one of the vegetable giants and fruit giants. And you can buy locally from a local farmer and pay cash. And by paying cash, you also, or Bitcoin, I know there's some here that accept Bitcoin, you can avoid paying the rent or the tax on purchasing by your local and state and federal governments if you're in the United States. You can avoid taxation this way, and you can avoid paying the tax to the megacorp. All in one fell swoop, as they say. So these are just a few things I was thinking. Resisting through peaceful action. And I want to make a more of a focus on resistance through peaceful action. And so I did look into some peaceful anarchist movements, and I found, in fact, I actually just looked up Quaker anarchism, and the first thing that popped up was a website / podcast called Friendly Anarchism, and I'll put the link to that in the description, but I'll just talk a little bit about it here. Let me just pull it up. So Friendly Anarchism is kind of a Quaker anarchist podcast and blog, I believe I was looking through it here before. And they also support different movements that are peaceful anarchist movements, and abolitionists and so on. There's all kinds of things. I'll just talk a little bit about it. And I emailed them, actually. I believe it's the person who started it, Catherine is her name. And we talked about it a little bit, and I've listened to one of their podcast episodes already, but of course with work it's kind of difficult to really delve in. But I looked into their podcast, and they have a lot of really good resources. Just on their website alone, a lot of good resources. But Catherine pointed me also to, let me pull it up here, a movement that I had never heard of before called A Movement for a New Society. And I'll put that link also in the description. And from there I also found AK Press, which I had seen before but I had forgotten all about it. But A Movement for a New Society, they're a peaceful movement that seeks to change the world simply by, I believe that by changing their own individual lives, at least from what I've seen. Now they do have outreach and things, but I think they really focus on individual change, which is coming back to my main focus after reading the article by Rothbard. My main focus after reading it was, what can you do in your own life to change? And this is something we've talked about with the agorists. You change things in your own life, and it eventually will affect those in your life. And maybe they will also see some useful changes that you've made and change those things in their own life. And this is how a social movement can exist with a strong root and a strong foundation, a strong base, is that the people involved are not just there for the protests, like so many protests we see. They're there just to be at a protest. And sure, maybe protests are great. Maybe they help give a voice to those without a voice. But in the end, it's what you do in your own life that's going to change the world around you. And so these are just a few things that I've discovered. I've put a lot of links below, I think, well, not a lot, but a 3 or 4. And this is going to be a short episode. And I'm almost actually out of material here. So this is going to be a short episode. I'm going to cut it off here soon. But I just wanted to mention these things and kind of give this perspective. But next week I think I'll cover a little bit more. I don't have a reading for next week. But I do want to I want to give you some homework for this week. I want to challenge you to change one thing in your life that will improve your life and decentralize your reliance on big tech or on the megacorps that offer up their goods at, you know, the super centers, the Walmarts, the Costcos, the whatever it is, and just change one thing. And maybe after you do that, change one more thing until eventually you've built a good foundation for your own life. And you can claim that you're living out the anarchism that you so passionately seek. Because so many anarchists these days, they see the future as a world without government or a world without these hierarchical structures that oppress the little guy or, you know, whatever it is. They see that, but... And what they do to make it come to fruition is by going to these protests, which is great. But unless you change your own individual life and the lives of those around you, then that movement will run out of gas way too quickly. And it's more likely to turn violent than if people are just changing. And by, like the Quakers from this excerpt from Rothbard, it was because they all... were together, they all lived out their own individuality and their own anarchy, and simply refused that they were able to at least sustain something something like anarchism for the 4, 5, 6, 7 years that they did. And unless there is a societal shift, no ideal of anarchy can exist. So that's why I will challenge you, my dear listener, to change something in your own life so that you have a solid foundation, not just for yourself, but for your local community, and build a local community, build a network of friends, build something, and they don't have to be everyone your best friend, just people that you meet, the local grocer, the local farmer that you buy your tomatoes from, or what, you know, what have you, your eggs, and through that, you have a strong root, a strong foundation, and through those connections, you can kind of share this idea of individuality and fighting against the oppression of the megacorps and the oppression of the governments, even the local government. So that's the homework. And if you follow me on Mastodon, I should have something else for us to read. No, you know what? I've got something. I do. And I will upload it today as well. I've gotten a few questions in my email and one or two on Mastodon. People have private messaged me about my stance on copyright. I think next week we should cover Stephen Kinsella's Against Intellectual Property. Let's do that. So I'll put it up on the website today so you can get a copy of it and read through it. And I've already read it, but I'm going to read it again just so I'm fresh on it. And we will read Against Intellectual... What is it? Yeah, Against Intellectual Property, and we'll cover that next week. How about that? So, let's read that, and that will kind of give you kind of a snapshot, because these are things that I thought before I read it, but I never really had I never formulated a very good argument against intellectual property. And this, I think Stephen Kinsella really makes a good effort, a good argument for this position. So let's read that, and... yeah, so that is that and your homework, which is to change one thing in your life. That will be your homework for this week. So thanks for listening.